and welcome to Dunktown, the podcast where we learn about basketball one game at a time. I'm Anastasia.
And I'm Agata.
And today we have an extra special guest. He's a comedian and writer from Desus and Marrow and host of the podcast Make My Day. It's Josh Gondelman.
Hi.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course.
Thank you for coming on.
Oh, happy to be here.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay, thank you. I was up a little late last night eating Domino's. So I'm surprised at how well my body has responded. I'm doing okay.
I love that. I'm a big Domino's head.
Yeah.
I live in New York City where people are like, why would you ever go to Domino's? And you're like, well, because sometimes it's 1 a.m.
It's reliable and it's consistent. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's also like, I'll tell you what there isn't at Domino's, like a line for people who read on some list that it's the best place you have to go in New York City. So,
right. Exactly. It's not like, you're not going to get like a $30 pizza at Domino's.
Like if you want a $30 pizza, that's a whole other thing.
Right.
You know?
Lots of great options.
Someone recently, maybe it was Maya Kosoff, wrote about her constant search for mid-tier pizza in New York because there's always like a high-end like Roberta's or John's and that's abundant and it's really great. And then there's like you can always find a Papa John's or a Domino's if you want, but that mid-tier the best little pizza place that like you would never recommend anyone go to if they were like, oh, you've got to have this regular pizza while you're in town. but it is so important to the experience of just like you need a place just to get regular pizza. But my regular pizza place closes at like 10. So if I'm coming home from a stand-up show and I'm like, you know, I'd really just like to punish my body because I'm an ingrate and I don't appreciate all it does for me every day. I just want to shove some pizza in it late at night. Domino's is the best option for me at that hour.
Nice.
It sounds like you do appreciate what your body's doing for you by giving it Domino's.
Yeah. It's like a thank you.
Yeah.
So are you getting back on stages and, you know?
Yeah. Yes. I was kind of planning to dip my toes a little bit and like, you know, branch out a little bit at a time, not seek too much stuff out, just take what comes to me at first. And then I got asked to do a recording for an hour stand-up special in June. Instead of like, oh, I'll ease back in and kind of remember how to do it little by little, I was like, well, I guess I have to know how to do an hour and remember how all my jokes go and be ready for that. So I like dove way in for like a month, and now I'm kind of going back to the program of like picking my spots a little bit more, which is both were nice. It was like nice to rip the band-aid off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Were you doing any like COVID like Zoom shows and stuff?
I did a bunch of Zoom and I only really did one outdoor show. I know that was pretty safe, but like my wife has diabetes and was like worried about being immunosuppressed. And so I was like, you know, I'm lucky enough that I have a day job that I can do from home. And so I didn't want to like press my luck running around for, you know, like seeking out stand-up gigs during the kind of heavier parts of the pandemic. So I was like doing Zoom stuff, which has kind of a different rhythm, but at least I knew the words to some of the jokes, but I was very out of practice. it was truly like starting the joke and being like, well, I just trust that the end of it will be here in my brain when it's time to say those words.
How was the like writer's room experience during the pandemic and working from home and everything?
We're still a little bit from home at Desus and Marrow. It was, you know, I miss getting to see all the people that I love that I work with in person. And I think it's really fun. And especially for the tapings of the show, it's so fun to be in the room, which we're doing now. We're back in the studio.
Oh, nice. Amazing.
Yeah. About 2-3 weeks ago, we did our first show back in the studio, but like we're still from home 2 to 3 days a week. And we're only really in the studio and the offices, or at least I am. My department comes in on days where we shoot and edit the show in person, because we can turn it around much faster than we could, like, shooting over Zoom, transferring all the files and, you know what I mean? Like, transferring them back to where they broadcast from. I know this is kind of what you come to me for, is like, just like in-depth conversation about like, Dropbox and you send it and whatever. That's what I'm here for.
I mean,
for.
We're curious. We're curious about that product. Cause yeah, a lot of writers' rooms went digital, obviously, and like, had to adapt, and it seems
it's like probably a different dynamic, right? I mean, just, you know,
it is.
Yeah. And then now things are like forever changed because they can't just force you to come back.
Like, which I do think
old days.
In a lot of ways, I do think it is nice to have shown people, and in an industry where like a lot of stuff gets done because like, oh, well, that's how we do it. It's really nice to have shown, like, for issues of accessibility and issues of like hiring from a like a more diverse spectrum of like backgrounds and locations that hopefully like will the industry will take a little bit from this last year, you know, as difficult and trying and sad as the events last year were, or year and a half, that like maybe we can go, oh, you know what? Like, if the person we like lives in Atlanta or Denver or Phoenix or Toronto, maybe we can be a little more adaptive rather than like come to New York or in Los Angeles and uproot your family for a short term gig, or else you will never work in this industry. Like, to me, it seems like there are allowances that can be made, and we kind of like figured out like, oh yeah, we can do that because that's what we had to do to keep the shows on the air so that anyone could make any money and and pay rent and stuff.
Exactly. Like, Pandora's box has been opened. They can't go back to being like, no, it doesn't work.
But how would it ever work? And it's like, well, the software is all there, and like, we've all become experts in using it from our own homes for the year.
Yeah, it's
been nice for you know, us, and maybe you've experienced this with your podcast, where it's like, now we can, you know, talk to you even though you're in New York.
Yeah.
And you're all set. Like, you're set up to like, people who otherwise didn't really have home studios, now they do.
Yes.
And so we can just get guests, you know, from all over the place and not just the LA pool.
I love that. That aspect of people kind of learning a new flexibility. And again, I like hate to sound like I'm like the silver lining of the pandemic, because like, they're really, it's like, well, too many people died for me to be like, but on the bright side. But I do think that like, amidst how hard and bad things were, the kind of the way that people learn to adapt, hopefully, again, we can hold on to in a way that is like beneficial in the long term. Because I started my podcast during the pandemic. We were going to launch it like a couple of weeks before, and then I had to put off the first recording by a week, and then in that time, excuse me, it became impossible to go to a studio. So like, I've been remote the whole time, and it like, it works great. I think the tech is good enough now. Like, I think within the last probably whatever 5 years, it's gotten good and like largely affordable enough that, and easy enough that you can just like use Zoom and Zencast or Squadcast or whatever, like whatever applications people use to record these things. And I don't think, you know, I like to be in a room with somebody, but like, what is more important than like whatever like 3% intimacy you gain being in a room is the fact that like, I can schedule this on people's terms. You know, like, if I want to have a friend in LA on my show, or I want to do this, I can just like walk into the office in my apartment and record it without having to wait until like, oh yeah, I guess I'll do it when I'm in town. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that kind of stuff. Like, we don't have to be beholden to those kind of scheduling.
For sure. Yeah. Clubs. And Gabe had moved to, so we were all in LA, and then Gabe moved to Denver, and that was before the pandemic even happened. So we had to figure out like the logistics of all of that ahead of time. So we were good to go once it was like, well, I guess we're just doing this for however long.
Yeah.
But there is something fun and magical about like all being in the same room together.
Yeah.
That I'm looking forward to doing getting back to that soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. Well, let's talk a little bit about your basketball history, because we've seen you like post about the NBA. Mm-hmm. You're clearly a fan. So, when did that start? And like, can you just kind of talk through your whole journey?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been a basketball fan, not maybe as long as I can remember, but definitely since I was a child. Like, I remember. So I'm 36, I was born in 85, and I think my consciousness, and I'm from the Boston area. So like the first thing I knew about in terms of basketball was the existence of Larry Bird. But I caught on, I was slightly too young to have witnessed his heyday as a player. So like mm-hmm. by the time I was like a Boston Celtics fan, he was playing in like a back brace or whatever, yeah. essentially. Mm-hmm. And so I missed out on that. And that's kind of like my first memory of like going to the Boston Garden, the old garden, before the Fleet Center and the TD Bank Boston Garden yeah. of banking. And being like, oh, are we going to see Larry Bird? And my dad being like, no, that's the past.
That's over now.
Yeah.
He mowed his mom's lawn too many times. Mm-hmm, and now he yep. won't play.
Yeah. Too many. He partied too hard after all those championships and he threw out his back. And that was kind of like the genesis of it. I remember that. And I don't know like specifically why the aesthetics of basketball, because I'm a pretty big, like for a person who's like, kind of a not super coordinated dork with bad vision, I'm a pretty big New England sports guy fan, but like definitely the Celtics and the NBA is like where my like big rooting interest is. And like embarrassingly, I have not adopted a rooting interest in a WNBA team. And like the last two summers, I keep being like, I've got to do it. And I think the Liberty plays at the Barclays Center now, yeah. which is like very close and accessible to like where I live in Brooklyn. So like, I'm still deciding whether it's going to be the Liberty or whether I'm going to go with the Connecticut team that's like closer to where I grew up. But I think it would be nice. I think it will be nice to have one New York City team. So that's, I think it's going to be the Liberty.
Yeah. They're both great teams. True. So you kind of like the Liberty has a young squad that is gonna, you know, pop off in a couple years probably.
Mm-hmm.
Also great jerseys with the Liberty.
Yeah. Yeah. Really good.
Their
yeah.
branding is great. Yeah. Love it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sun is just, they're amazing.
They're
that's
very
a fun team to yeah. follow for sure.
Were
we
they,
can,
were
we
they
can help you make a decision right now.
No, this is very helpful. We'll I think it's going to be the Liberty specific. I mean, like, I have no specific allegiance to Connecticut.
Yeah.
And it feels like this is my opportunity, right? Because, like, as a, you know, growing up, Sox, Celtics, Patriots, Bruins, it feels like ridiculous. I don't know. I always, especially in entertainment, I get so resentful of seeing someone who, like, moves, who's, like, notably from Boston, and then you see them at like a Yankee game in a Yankee hat, and I'm just like, there's nothing sacred. Like, it gets my like New England blood boiling in a way that I don't like about myself, but is absolutely present within me. And so, it feels like the idea of being like, oh, I'm gonna adopt the Mets as well. Like, mm-hmm. it just feels like, well, not after 1986, I can't do that. Are you kidding me, guy? And so, like this feels good because I've been in New York City for a decade at this point. And,
wow.
and so it is nice to have like, an allegiance that feels like, oh, this is also a home to me. Like
yeah.
it feels weird. Like after 10 years, even if I'm not like a friggin' New Yorker, like after 10 years, it is like a hometown in a way that it isn't after 3 years, obviously.
Right,
like
right.
I have roots and friends and like neighborhood preferences. And my career is so much more here than it is in where I'm from now. So it definitely like, yeah. So let's call it. We're going to call it officially. As of today, this is, I'm going to put the alerts on my ESPN app.
Yes.
And I'm going to, yeah.
The so newest I'm, New York Liberty fan.
The newest New York Liberty fan, born now.
Wow. I love that. Well, we're probably the kind of fans that would make you angry because we pick up teams wherever we live and we're like, we're just rooting for them all.
Yeah, we want everyone to have fun.
I think it's specifically that it's Boston, New York. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. It's like, yeah. I don't begrudge people. I'm always very charmed when people move to a place and are like incredibly loyal to their hometown team. But I'm also like, you know, if you come from a place where you didn't have a specific rooting interest and you move to LA or you move to Atlanta or you move to Dallas and you like pick up the local teams because you're like, well, this is the culture of where I am. That's yeah. That's like a special thing. And it's fun to be part of it.
Yeah.
It's fun to be part of it. And like, it's no fun if you're like in Dallas and you're not like against the Mavericks or whatever, Dallas Football Club, mm-hmm. or the Cowboys, to like hate it and just be on the outskirts of everything. Right. You know what I mean? To be like, yeah. Oh, the who are they playing? A team that I don't care about. Well, I want them to lose.
Yeah.
And I don't care if the other team wins. But I think like with being from Boston, it just is like such a thing that I grew up with. And but it absolutely does not go the other way. And I understand that.
It does feel like Boston, you know, the whole city, or maybe all of New England, kind of like took an oath at some point, and you really can't go back on it. Like, I know people who were born in Boston but left when they were five,
mm-hmm.
but their parents would disown them if they weren't a Celtics fan. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
So intense.
I kind of like that. Like, yeah. I think that it's nice to, like, I don't begrudge anyone who is like, gosh, I love watching just basketball played at the highest level. And it's such a joy to watch Kevin Durant score 49 points in an Eastern Conference, or not Eastern Conference Finals, because it was the
semifinals,
right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it was the Hawks Bucks. But in the Eastern Conference semifinals, and like, what a virtuoso performance. And I just root for like that. It's truly the love of the game. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to like be like, if fans who are like that aren't real fans, because I think that there's like a beautiful purity to that. But on the other hand, I do kind of like generational, irrational blood feuds in sports, because it feels like there's so much that is so like global, and so much that is that like so many people are so mobile now, and mm-hmm. and like aesthetic preferences and artistic preferences kind of transcend regional stuff a lot of the time. And I do think sports, like, in a way that like, this is, you know, there sports gives you that thing to be like, this is tradition. Like, it's like, you know, I light Hanukkah candles, mm-hmm. and I love the Celtics. And those are things that I got from like who I am and where I'm from, mm-hmm. and that I'm not gonna stop doing them because I moved. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about the current season and the current finals?
I wish that the finals had been a little bit more competitive so far. It feels like Phoenix is in pretty in control. Mm-hmm. And again, not a specific rooting interest in Milwaukee. So this is again, and I'm sorry if you're like, nobody gives a shit that you're about New England stuff, but like Chris Middleton just like obliterates the Celtics every time he plays them. And mm-hmm. I just want him to play at that level every game, so it doesn't feel as personal to me.
Yeah.
And so there's no specific like, but and I obviously like, it's fun to watch Giannis Antetokounmpo dunk from 30 feet away in two steps. It's just awesome.
Yeah.
But I more just wish it were like a more competitive series so far. Mm-hmm. I'm not counting them out overall, but it definitely has not felt like nail biters in either game.
I'm holding out that they'll win their home games, you know,
I
like
hope
the
so.
Bucks will, because they are kind of an inconsistent team, mm-hmm. but they do so much better at home. It's interesting.
Yeah no one wants to see a sweep in the finals. That's just boring.
No, it's no fun. And nobody, even that, like, they call it the gentleman's sweep, right? Is like, you win one of the home, your first home game, and then you lose the second home game, and then you go back on the road and lose on the road. I would love it to be competitive. Like, I would love to go at least six. I just think that that's like so much more fun, obviously. And you know what? One thing that has really jumped out at me is like, how loud the crowd was in Phoenix for game one.
Anastasia was there.
No way.
That was all my doing.
Yeah,
that's she was screaming.
It was like, I'm from Arizona, mm-hmm. and my sister's a season ticket holder. So as soon as they won the Western Conference Finals, she texted me and was like, hey, tickets just went on sale. Should I get some? And I just so happened to be already going to Phoenix to visit my family.
Oh, that's perfect.
And so we went to game one, and it is, look, I'm kind of old. It is kind of too loud in there. my little ears.
Oh, no.
It was one of the first games, and I get that it's the finals, but it was one of the first games we were watching on TV. I was like, wow, it is loud.
Yeah.
Like the crowd is in it that I've seen in this playoffs. And you know, there have been others. I don't want to like upset the good people of Philadelphia and Los Angeles.
We're gonna get so many emails.
It was that kind of loud where it was like not even on an important play, mm-hmm. Where it was just like wire to wire, people were like, ah!
And it's like consistent even in the arena where
You should be wearing those like baby headphones.
I should wear baby headphones, actually. Mm-hmm. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
But it was interesting because I've been to lots of Suns games in the past, and there's definitely been years where no one's there, or mm-hmm. it's more the away team fans. You know, obviously when Lakers play, it's like usually packed with Laker fans. And there were some people saying like, oh, all of these fair weather fans or whatever. But I'm like, no, this is rad. Like, these people, the excitement they're feeling now, that's not going to go away. They're going to stick. Like, I became a fan of the Suns during the Steve Nash, Amari mm-hmm. Sotomayor era.
Sure.
Because it was so exciting to be there. And I stuck with it. So these people are now going to stick with it. And
especially if they win. Yeah.
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 And but there was, again, I'm old, but there was people in front of me who would not sit down. They stood the entire game.
That's a little
That's
much.
That's rough. Yeah.
And it's a little much. Was complaining because there is actually, you can buy a ticket that's standing room at the Phoenix Arena. So why did you pay for these nice seats?
Right. I do think standing the whole time, even in the finals, is like a little much. I don't mind like, you know, like hollering and getting into it on every play.
Yeah.
But the standing, because then it's like, not only is it, you know, if it's loud, it's loud. And you're not going to like create a loudness throughout the arena.
Right.
But it is absolutely, you're creating, when you stand, you're creating a ripple effect because it is now incumbent upon the person behind you to either not see or stand. And then it screws over the people behind them. Mm-hmm. It's like a whole thing. I think we saw
Vin Diesel standing. We went to a Clippers game and he was standing in the aisle and the like people behind him were just screaming at him like, dude, it's like,
that's so funny.
It was really
the game's
funny.
Happening. You need to
a basketball game happening, dude. I was like, that's like, Vin.
Yeah, don't yell at Vin Diesel.
This is not very family of you. No, that's awesome. I think your point is really well taken though too about fair weather fans, and because it's like the team, no offense, but they were bad for like 10 years in a row. You're not accruing that many new fans when mm-hmm. that happens, and it's not like a fair weather thing for people to be like, oh, I guess basketball isn't like what I'm the most into right now, especially as like a kid.
When
you want to like, you know, you're aware of like what's good and exciting, and it's hard to like latch on to a team. It's much less likely to latch on to a team that's just like kind of struggling and going through that period of not being great. But like, agreed, when those Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire, Sean Marion teams in the like mid to late aughts, right? Those teams were so exciting. I remember where I was watching those series, like the Spurs series. Mm-hmm. Like I remember it being in college and like watching at my downstairs neighbor's apartment, like just like very exciting and galvanizing. And it's like not surprising that like that's an era of basketball where you're like, yeah, I'm in on this team. And they just haven't had that since then, right? Until now.
Right. Yeah. It's been that long, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And there's now, you know, people who are going to, like, kids and stuff who are feeling that now, and then they're just gonna, like, take them that with them forever.
Yeah. I mean, it was the same thing for me. Like, I started watching the Mavs when I was in Dallas, and it was the season that they won. So obviously very exciting, very fun time to be a fan, to become a fan of a team, like, right when they win. And, like, now look at me. I do a podcast about basketball.
That's awesome.
I mean, there was a long period where I wasn't really paying attention. And then once we started doing the show, like, we got way more into it. But yeah, I mean, that was the spark.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you were saying earlier that you, like, pick up allegiances in the places that you live. So do you, and excuse me for being out of the loop a bad guess, but, like, what are your Los Angeles allegiances?
The Clippers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Even before I moved here, Agata already lived here, and I would come visit, and we went to a couple Clippers games because they were cheap and easy to go to. And also, it was Lob City time, so that was fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was a fun time as well.
Mm-hmm. That was a fun time.
Yeah. Like, you know, the last couple, like, before Kawhi, I would say, was, like, that was, like, the peak of going to Clippers games, just because there was no pressure and no expectations, and it was just fun to watch and be there. And then I think once Kawhi came, and, like, the perception of the Clippers changed throughout the whole, like, fandom of the NBA, I feel like. So things have definitely changed. I mean, we still have a good time. We went to game 6 of the Clipper Suns series. And that was when we saw Vin Diesel. So that was, like, the main highlight, but also, like, it was a fun game to be at. And, but I mean, I still like the Mavs. It's kind of hard with how shitty their organization is, but
yeah,
I love Luka.
That stuff is so distressing and disappointing. I mean, like, the organizational stuff, like the chaos of, like, Don Nelson leaving, that's, like, a bummer. That's, like, obviously, like, oh, that's too bad. I would like the team that I like to be thriving, but, like, the, like, kind of that harassment, you know, sexual misconduct story that broke a couple years ago, is, like, that stuff is just so hard to overlook and, like, feel good about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I just love watching Luka play. He's such a good little boy.
so fun to watch play. And, oh, but with the Suns team, I almost feel like, and this is, like, too simplistic. This is, like, sports movie simplistic, but it is, like, a real turning point in the careers of just getting to the finals is so huge for the three most key players on the Suns, right? Where, like, Chris Paul was the guy who, like, everyone would point to and be like, oh, but he's never even been to the conference finals. Mm-hmm. And now he's like, we're the same age. But, I mean, he eats a little better than I do, so it makes sense that he would be in the NBA finals.
He's got that plant-based diet. He gets Domino's late at night.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
he's like, what do you have that's vegan? All right, I'll just chug a quart of sauce.
Marinara, like,
Chris
sauce.
Paul, and so, like, that turnaround is so huge. And then, like, there was kind of this among, I think, a lot of NBA fans, the idea, oh, like, Devin Booker is scoring, like, 26, 27 a game, but, like, there's no one else who's shooting on this team. So, like, obviously, if you know, like, good stats, bad team. And then even DeAndre Ayton, this is, I think, what reminded me of it, but DeAndre Ayton was the guy that was, like, well, ridiculous that he was picked ahead of Luka, right? Mm-hmm. It was, like, him, Bagley, Trae Young, right? Yeah. That was the draft. I'm not making that up.
Yeah, that's it.
And so it's, like, it's just, like, so nice to see people thriving that had been kind of, like, the people I think thought kind of smugly from afar, and myself, you know, I'm not above this, that, like, oh, I get who these people are as players, mm-hmm. and what their legacy is. And now it's, like, it's just such a different perception.
Yeah. I think this is this Suns team is a great example of how you have to get the right puzzle pieces in place, because everyone was like, oh, the Nets have all of the superstars, they're winning it all, bing, bang, boom. But obviously having, like we know from this happening time and time again, having superstars, having all-stars, having a bunch of, you know, great shooters on the team, that's not the only thing. Mm-hmm. And this Suns team is a weird example of like, Ayton had the talent, but wasn't confident or aggressive enough. He needed a leader like Chris Paul to come in. And Booker was a great shooter, but he didn't have much support. And so now, and then like Mikal Bridges mm-hmm. and, oh, actually Campaign is a great example yeah. because he was on the Bulls. Everyone hated him and treated him horribly. He was, you know, I mean, he was wasn't out of the doing league, a whole right? lot. He and went out of the league, mm-hmm. came back, now is killing it. I mean, he's yeah. so good.
I mean,
and Cam Johnson, arc. When they drafted him. I mean, yes. so many. When Cam Johnson was drafted, people were like, he's 23. That's the oldest anyone's ever been. I can't believe he's coming into the league.
Ancient. His yeah. bones are dust.
You know, he played in high school against Mel Brooks. Like, that's the way people were acting. There's that highlight of him dunking on Bob Cousy when they played AAU together, and it's just like it's so I think all these players and the Chris Paul stuff additionally, I think he kind of gets a lot of the like narrative blame for Lob City disbanding, right? Like the mm-hmm. PR was very bad of like, oh, you know, DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin didn't like having this like older guy who was always telling them what to do. And then when you read about this year's Suns, they're like, everybody just loves how Chris Paul knows exactly what to do and like knows how to put people in positions to succeed. So like the same qualities, it yes. sounds like, you know, like maybe maybe there's like a little less interpersonal friction, but those same qualities of like, this guy is a, it goes very quickly, like when the team is thriving, from like as bossy and mean to like what a born leader who knows how to lead a leader right. of men, you know.
Exactly.
I think it's like a really like exciting thing to watch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. We have to ask you this question that we ask all of our guests, and keep in mind that this situation would be fully consensual, but
okay,
who out of the current league, given the opportunity, would you kiss? And you can say more than one person.
Who would I kiss?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I don't know that. I mean, so let's game this out. With okay. a lot of NBA players, I think the age difference is a little problematic.
Yes.
We feel that way too.
This comes up.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm not the first to think so. So I guess, maybe, so it's got to be somebody who's close to my age.
Mm-hmm. Maybe like Carmelo Anthony.
Oh, yeah, it could be Melo.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think, because I think it's like, I'm a married person, so this is fraught to begin with. But look, I think maybe we got to go Chris Paul.
Ooh, oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I feel like the height difference isn't too bad.
Yeah, right.
How I'm tall not is used he? To, and this is, you know, this is, I guess, just like toxic masculinity, but like, I'm not used to someone like leaning way down to kiss me.
Yeah.
Oh, he's only 6 feet. Okay.
Yeah. I think, okay. I think it's got to be Chris Paul. If again, like you said, if he was into it, that yeah, I think it's where I got to go. So, cause we're about the same age, we're pretty close to the same height. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's a born leader.
He's leaning into leader. You. You don't have to initiate it. So you yeah. don't have to feel weird.
He's leading the transaction yeah. or not yeah. transaction. That sounds weird.
No, but he's putting people in positions to succeed.
Yeah.
He's the point guard.
Yeah, exactly.
Born leader in every area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's guiding you over to the couch, sitting you down, putting mm-hmm. his arm around you, bringing sure. you in, you know.
But aww. Yeah, I think, yeah, I think that makes the most sense.
He's also a handsome guy. Yeah. We've talked about this
he's
before.
He's a handsome guy.
He can be fiery. He can, you know, I think we didn't really like him much before because he seemed mean.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. and, but I feel like in this new role of his, maybe he's matured. I don't know.
I also think it would be weird to kiss a player that I cheer for regularly because it'd be like, oh, this is awkward.
There's like a parasocial relationship there that might.
You don't want them to look out in the crowd and see you.
Yeah. Oh, right. After. Yeah. Where it's like, oh, now we have this history. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to have some separation.
I'm assuming it doesn't. Like, I'm assuming that even within the boundaries of this, it's not like we get married afterwards.
I mean, I'm not going to stop you if you both want that.
If it's a good kiss, I mean, yeah. Who's to deny?
It could. lead to more, but
that being said, it could also just be like a fun kiss amongst friends, you know.
Just two strangers in a bar,
kiss,
and then
New
never
Year's.
See each other. Yeah, Year's, exactly. Right? The balls dropping.
You think back on it fondly, but it's not like, you know. And your wife was like, "Yeah, go ahead and kiss him."
Yeah,
yeah. Where my wife would be like, "Yeah, I guess kiss Chris Paul."
She can also kiss a player in this situation.
I wonder
if
she
would kiss. May not be into that.
Hey, look, this, I think fair is fair.
Yeah. It's an exchange. It's an equal exchange.
Mm-hmm. Great answer.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, let's get into the news. So much happens in a week and we can't possibly cover it all. So we wrap it up in a little segment called Previously on Basketball.
Last time on Blossom.
Basketball.
Nice. All right, whoosh me in, Gabe. The Suns are up 2-0 over the Bucks in the NBA Finals. We'll reveal who wins when we return from our break in 6 weeks. The Atlanta Dream suspend Kennedy Carter indefinitely for conduct detrimental to the team.
Ooh.
Sue Bird becomes the first WNBA player to get 3,000 career assists. Malika Andrews replaces Rachel Nichols as sideline reporter for the finals. Damon Stoudemire, Kenny Atkinson, and Scott Brooks accept assistant coaching jobs with the Celtics, Warriors, and Blazers, respectively. The Connecticut Sun and Seattle Storm will face off for the inaugural WNBA Commissioner's Cup on August 12th. The winning team takes home $500,000.
Wow.
Middle school basketball phenom Zaila Avant-Garde wins the Scripps National Spelling Bee.
Hell yeah.
I love this story. Can we watch the little video of her winning the spelling bee?
Maria, M-U-R-R-A-Y-A.
That is correct.
Oh. Ooh,
so precious.
She twirl. Does a little spin. It's so cute. Amazing.
So I first saw just that, and then people were like, oh, she actually has, she holds a couple Guinness, you know, world records for dribbling. And I was like, whoa, okay, that's... Hell yeah. Amazing. And then, or actually, do we have a video of her dribbling, Gabe? She's on a unicycle, dribbling three
Amazing.
Basketballs.
It's incredible.
Around the back, even. She's got two little balls and two basketballs.
She's juggling and dribbling simultaneously. Oh my God. How does she do it?
She's standing on two basketballs and dribbling in a circle.
Oh, I have not seen those. That's crazy.
Yeah. Maybe this is me. And if this is my own, like prejudice, I guess, against spelling bee winners. but I'd never seen, I don't know of any other spelling bee winner who's also like an athletically gifted world record holder.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, I don't remember in any other year someone being like, oh, this 8-year-old who's 4'2" also has like a 39-inch vertical or whatever.
I mean, I honestly, you know, whatever, listeners, prove us wrong if we're wrong, you know, but I can't even remember anyone saying anything additional about a spelling bee winner. It's just like they won the spelling bee and that's it. And there's not more information. You know what I mean?
Yes, so just, right, where it's like, because that's what it thinks, like when you're a kid and you're really good at something, I feel like so much of the time, that's like the thing you are encouraged to spend all your time doing and the thing that you do, even with the spelling bee, you hear from the kids and they're just practicing all the time. Right. And then Gabe brought up this quote that she had she said, spelling is really a side thing I do. It's like a little hors d'oeuvre, but basketball is like the main dish, which is like so incredible and so impressive. But she's like, oh, the hobby that I use to relax from my hobby that I'm great at.
Yeah.
I'm also like, better than everyone else at that.
I mean, what? I'm like speechless. She's incredible.
I know.
I want to be her.
She said that she wants to be in the WNBA, and I really, really cannot wait to see her.
That would be amazing.
Draft
so
night.
Cool.
Yeah. Let's see her on CNN.
You own, you know, Guinness World Records for your dribbling. Are you good at just everything?
Oh, well, just about everything I do, I'm good at.
That's what I think. That's what I figured.
I love it.
Right?
There's also the B-roll while they're talking, like of her playing basketball. Yeah. She puts on like a filthy Euro step on someone. That's not like a kid's maneuver.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously she's like a high level world record holding player, but I watched that and was like, what a move.
Yeah. These other kids are like, I'm a child. What are you doing to me right now?
Yeah. She's got a bright future, obviously. Let's look at this video of Giannis pumping up his squad.
There's Giannis Antetokounmpo showing the
he
emotion.
He slaps the chair.
He said when he watched.
He's like, wow. He's playing a drum set that's not there.
He punched the chair. I always held that that tweet from when he was very young, and I think right before, right after he was drafted, when he was like just had a smoothie for the first time, right?
That's our favorite.
God bless America.
That is so. I hold that so close,
I
feel like that has such an influence on how I think about his personality, which is undue, right? Like he's lived a whole life across the globe,
amazing.
Right?
It's a great tweet.
For the first time, a smoothie, man, God bless America, blushing smiley emoji, which I think it's the blushing smiley emoji that is like so endearing.
Yes.
I love him so much. We just had on Mir and Fader, that episode will come out after this one, but she just
no,
wrote
it. It just came out.
Oh, it just came out. Yeah. Right. But she wrote a whole book about him. She interviewed like over 200 people that knew him. In Greece and like played with him, but also just like people in his life, and like it's so good. His history is just like so fun. He's such a great player and great guy.
Yeah, his journey is like, I feel like that smoothie tweet kind of sums everything up about his journey, because it's like it's like he was just this like young, you know, I don't, what's the opposite of worldly? I mean, he was just he didn't have any opportunity. He didn't have access to things that, you know, a lot of people who get drafted into the NBA have access to. And then he comes here.
Yeah.
And brings that, like, even now, I feel like he's bringing his, like, work ethic and mentality.
He doesn't take it for granted.
No, he doesn't take it for granted.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, this is such like a, like you brought up like a parasocial relationship, but he does project. I don't know if this is like how he's feeling and it shows, or if it's something that he tries to project when he plays, but like he does seem like he enjoys playing basketball.
Yeah.
And which I think is always like, again, that's just me reading something into a person I've never met and have rarely been in the same city as.
Yeah.
But I do think that kind of like, I think we're taught to like prize that kind of like enthusiasm. And even the like punching the chair was like, because it's Giannis, I think we read it as like, come on, guys, we can do this. And not like, I'm so sick of this, not winning this game.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We initially had like the wrong impression of him when we first started like watching Bucks games for the show. We were like, oh, this guy is like so intense. He just screams at people. He dunks on them and like yells in their face. Yeah. And we're like, oh, we're not into that. We like when they're friends and they're like nice to each other. But then like learning more about him, it's like, oh, he is a really sweet guy.
Yeah.
And we've never met him either, by the way. So we're just making a lot of assumptions.
And he also like not like when you were saying like kind of came from living in Greece, right, and not having like the kind of like intense high level basketball experience of like the pre-professional basketball experience, right, like you have in like the high level prospects in the United States have a lot of them, and he you know wasn't drafted that highly. He was drafted like middle of the first round, right. And like it's you know, I think that's like, again, I'm always looking for reasons to enjoy watching a player and to root for them.
Yeah.
Unless they do something that is like morally reprehensible.
Oh, yeah. Or then we throw them in the trash can.
Or leave the Celtics to play for the Nets.
Oh, man.
Uh-oh.
When I went to game one of the finals, I realized like I had never seen the Bucks play live because they don't really come out here that often. Or at least I can't remember seeing them play.
It's definitely less often than they play the other Eastern Conference teams.
Yeah. And I was like watching Giannis even in shoot-arounds before the game. And I was just like, the way he moves is incredible. I mean, he's just so graceful. He's like just fun to watch even just during shoot-arounds.
Yeah.
I saw him play against the Nets a few years ago, and it was like not a great game, but it wasn't like an all-time classic Giannis game, but you would just go, oh, he just keeps scoring. Cause I think when you watch on TV and you see like right in your face, it's like, oh, he's 12 for 21 and he has this many points, and it's just like put right in your face. Yeah. And you don't have to like look up at the Jumbotron. You're like, oh, this is part of the experience. But when you're at the game, I feel like you kind of lose sight of some of that like counting stats stuff just because of the experience of it. And you're like, it seems distracted. Like he's scoring a lot. You're like, oh yeah, he just has 34 points kind of quietly throughout this game. And you're just like, oh, he's so good.
Yeah. He's amazing. All right. Let's take a look at a special Suns fan.
It's Guy Fieri after game two, shooting on the court, missing every shot.
Guy Fieri doesn't take games off.
No.
I mean, to be fair, I probably wouldn't make a single shot in the same situation. But, you know, I think Guy Fieri's generally a good guy, right? He's known for
I think that's true.
Yeah, he's known for like taking care of firefighters and like being nice to people.
Yeah.
My friend Rax King wrote about him in her upcoming book, but she's talked about him a lot. And I think supposedly when Guy Fieri goes to your restaurant on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, it causes an enormous spike, not even spike, enormous bump in that restaurant's business that just lasts forever.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Which is incredible.
You know,
that he's like the restaurant. He's like Santa Claus.
Yeah. He shows up, he sticks his hand in your nacho cheese. And then from then on, you know, you're riding high.
When I was in Phoenix visiting my family, my sister took me to a restaurant called Curry Corner in Tempe, Arizona, that he went to. And there's a little plaque of a photo with all of the employees with Guy Fieri. And I just feel like that's, you know, that's as good as getting a Michelin star.
Yeah.
Agreed. I think... Yes.
Yeah.
I will say I went to, because a few years ago there was he had that restaurant in Times Square that Pete Wells reviewed in the Times and just like ripped it in half. And it was like a very like, you know, he really went in a way where you're like, you're having a lot of fun with this. and it was not a good restaurant.
Yeah.
I went once with friends and it was
that's like
good.
The trash can nachos.
It's
called American Grill, right?
It was I'm just thinking Guy's American items. Kitchen, maybe? Kitchen.
Oh, yeah. I think that is it. Like, they bring you out a trash can full of nachos.
I would dump it. They sell those. They sell those still. You can get them as like a gift basket almost. And you can send them to people. Because maybe it was a short time thing, but a couple of my friends got them around Christmas last year.
That's funny.
And I was like very jealous. I wish that restaurant had been better because everything that I know about him generally, I think it's like, oh, he seems pretty cool and great. But that restaurant was maybe not as bad as the review was. Like, I think that there was like a venomous quality to the writing where it was almost like if Guy Fieri, it was like if it was written so aggressively, it was like it was Bill Cosby's restaurant. Like,
oh my God.
But not a great restaurant.
The Burbank Airport here is like, it's like fully Guy Fieri'd out.
Yeah.
Like you walk through the whole thing. It's like you can't escape his face.
Yeah, it's all his burger. Right. It's
like he's even on the side of like the water thing. Like he's everywhere. There's a burger restaurant. There's like a little bar. Like,
yeah. That's funny.
He's influential.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. I bet he's not standing up in everybody's way during a game. I bet he's respectful.
Yes.
I bet
he's waiting till after the game to shoot
to get his shots
balls.
Up. Yeah. He respects the working person's experience of spending money on a ticket and wanting to get to see the players and not just the back of his spiky hair.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
I would be so mad if I paid a ton of money so and I just funny. Saw his spikes.
Truly the funniest silhouette of a person to be like in front of you blind. Blocking out the game would be Guy Fieri's hair.
At least Vin Diesel has no hair. So yeah. It's like, yeah. You know.
He's not that tall, right? Vin Diesel?
No, he's not that big. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
couldn't
if
guess.
He's directly in front of you. As my dad would say, Mr. Diesel, you make a better door than a window.
I wish someone said that. Yeah. That would have been perfect.
He's not six feet tall.
That is not possible that he's 6 feet tall. Like
Gabe
just googled
it and that's what caused the outrage.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I would guess 5'8".
I would say 5'10". I'm gonna give him benefit of the doubt and say 5'10".
6 feet is out of the question.
Yeah, absolutely not. Absolutely not. All right, let's move on to our next segment. So each week we highlight the best/funniest, cutest comments made by the members of our Cutie Nation Discord. It's our cutie comment of the week.
Now to leave a great comment.
This week's comment is from Malcolm. It's a screenshot from I Think You Should Leave, and it says, Trae Young and James Harden next season, and the screenshot says, you can't change the rules just because you don't like how I'm doing
it. Which is great. It's from the ghost tour sketch from the first episode of the new season.
That sketch is amazing.
So funny.
Literally guffawed watching it, which I'm not.
Do you follow the I Think You Should League Pass?
Yes.
It's which so is, good.
I can't believe how much content they got out of the first season of that show. Like they were consistently posting. Like,
and honestly, it felt like so it
was always
so
yeah,
well.
It always
yes.
fits.
I find okay. So a complaint that I have sometimes about like Twitter meme culture is like sometimes people will be like, remember this joke from this show, and it's like, yeah, that's not like clever. You're just finding another joke about the same thing. Like some people do it really like artfully and you're like, oh, what a funny connection to make.
Yeah,
but like I think people kind of go to the well of like maybe The Simpsons a little often.
Right, yeah.
And that's the specific one where I'm like, yeah, The Simpsons has been on for 35 years and they've done jokes about every topic, so like good remembering a joke.
Right.
But with I Think You Should Leave, I truly feel like people are applying these like weird Tim Robinson quotes and jokes to scenarios that are like so far afield from them.
Yeah.
Right.
That I'm like, yep, I love it. I love it every time. I'm such a sucker for it.
Yeah. Every time I click that heart button, I can't stop myself. Yeah,
there's the one that kept getting me from the at NBA leave, I Think You Should Leave Pass was it was him yelling at Connor O'Malley's like record producer character, and it was like, stop tricking, and then it was filled in with Knicks fans into thinking they're going to get stars instead of be stars. And it's so, it was just like, it really made me laugh. So God, I love that show so much.
It's so good. Amazing. It's perfect. I also want to add, Tim Robinson has been, he was in Thrasher magazine and has been showing off his skateboarding skills recently.
Oh, hell yeah.
And the guy can shred.
Yeah, he's a really good skater.
I watched him break a skateboard on Instagram, I think.
I think he broke Whitmer Thomas's.
Whitmer Thomas's, yeah. Yeah, it's so, man, again, this is like, I feel like the theme of the episode, but like parasocial relationships. He is a person who I'm just like, I love his work so much.
Me too. And
I'm just like, really, everything I have ever read about him or heard from him seems like he's like a very sweet and decent man. And yeah. I just want that to be true so much.
Detroiters.
Detroiters the best. I read like he had been, when he would go on, or he would put it on Instagram, he would have his kids like tell jokes.
Oh yeah.
And his, I think his son would do it, but then his daughter started asking him for money for it. And he was like, you know what? You're providing the content. I do owe you money if I'm using your jokes.
That is so funny.
Oh my God. That's hilarious. Yeah. He would be amazing to have on the show. We did have
dream guest
Lily Sullivan, who was on the first season.
Oh, of course. I mean, that's the funniest thing. The funniest basketball thing that's ever happened is John and Dave Tesh with Sudeikis on SNL.
I love that. Oh, so good. Someday we'll have him.
Yeah.
And Josh, you can come back. You can be on the episode.
Yeah.
Look, when new president of basketball operations, Brad Stevens, overhauls the Celtics roster, and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart. I have a giant Marcus Smart jersey on the wall in our writer's room. I actually don't know where it is now because the writer's room just got overhauled.
Oh, no.
But the kid Mero routinely knocks off the wall or pretends to set on fire. But when they're thriving again, we'll come back on. I'll come back on and I'll feel terrific.
Yeah. Yeah. We have to have you at a high point for the Celtics.
Yeah.
So exactly. You can celebrate.
Thank you.
Okay, cool. So if you want to be eligible for Cutie Comment of the Week, you can join our Cutie Nation Discord. You have to sign up on our Patreon, patreon.com/dunktown. Our live opening night watch along to Space Jam 2 is this Friday. So you better hurry up and sign up if you want to join us. It's going to be really fun. Let's get into our mail basket. You got mail. Today we have an email from Alexis. The subject is short shorts on the Olympic courts. And Alexis says, I was always going to read this story featuring my two favorite basketball guys, but when I read this bit, I realized it was also prime Dunktown material. So here's the excerpt. This week at Team USA's training camp ahead of the Tokyo Olympics, Popovich is getting to see Beal up close and personal to a degree he hasn't before. One thing has surprised him in particular. He's stronger than I expected. He's a strong young man. I always used to think of him as wiry and thin, but I was totally wrong. He's thick, Popovich said.
This feels very Sam Richardson on I Think You Should Leave.
It does. It's unclear whether Popovich would spell thick with two C's or one, but the point stands. Beal is bigger than he may appear from afar, and that has helped him become one of the best scorers in the NBA. Happy summer to us all. Well,
wow.
I love the story. I love that Popovich
is now in love
he
with Bradley.
He was so
Beal.
Enamored by what he saw up close that he had to make a comment about it and call him thick.
Look, he's a handsome man. And
you don't got to tell me. I love Bradley Beal.
And obviously when he was younger, he was kind of wiry. And now he definitely is muscly. I mean, there's no bones about it.
He looks great.
I love that Popovich is like, how old is Poppy? He's like 70 something.
He's got to be about 70, right?
Yeah.
69 maybe.
72 would be my guess.
but just him admiring.
Oh, you got it.
72, right?
Wow,
on the dot.
Wow.
But yeah, just admiring the bodies of the young men playing for him.
And he also, like, Popovich, I think, is like, as far as NBA coaches go, like, fair. And I mean, he's pretty outspoken too about like political issues.
Yeah.
And like, he seems like, for, I just feel like any 72 year old white guy, you're like, oh man, this is a real, it's real dicey when we ask him for his opinion yeah. on the world. And he's like, it's just like, he seems like he's a thoughtful guy.
Yeah, for sure. I love him. And it seems like players love him, which I think is really important.
Mm-hmm. Oh, speaking of Popovich, we have another story with Kevin Durant, right?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. This just came out today.
Yeah. So Kevin Durant said that the reason why he's playing on the team was because, or playing for Popovich was a big factor.
Also, he'd never been to Japan before.
Yeah. So he had never been to Japan, and he played with a Japanese exchange student during his senior year of high school in Rockville, Maryland. And he wants to see his friend in Tokyo.
He's hoping to reconnect with his friend.
That's so cute.
That's wow. really nice. That's we were really talking sweet. About this. We love friendship
yeah,
on this podcast.
That's the undercurrent of this whole show. We love when people are friends and nice to each other.
Imagine being that guy, right? Like being like, oh, you're probably a pretty good basketball player if they were playing together at high school seniors,
yeah.
and you're like, oh, hey, my friend from high school is in town, and he wants to like get a beer or something. Like, ooh, like, yeah. Oh, future NBA first ballot Hall of Famer Kevin Durant.
The idea of Kevin Durant going into like a tiny little pub in Tokyo is very funny to me, because I felt like a giant when I was there. Like, you have to like duck to get in the doors and stuff. So imagining like a 7 foot tall basketball player, like, where would he even sit?
How would he comfortably fit in any place?
Right. Or like sit at the bar, like get a beer. I mean,
he's so globally famous too, that you're like, I imagine to like do anything as Kevin Durant is like a project.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
right.
you can't just be like, oh, I'll just like get a cab and show up at this. I mean, maybe he can, I don't know, but it definitely seems like that it's tough. I have heard that Steve Nash has been hanging out like for like going to some of the coffee places in Brooklyn,
mm-hmm.
just like, you know, around where he lives and works. And it's like, I think it's still, even that surprised me, but for Kevin Durant to just be like, oh yes, one beer please for me. Globally famous basketball megastar Kevin Durant.
And then, I mean, even if people didn't recognize him, he would still stand out a lot.
Yeah. Gosh, what a treat to go get a beer with your friends and run into Kevin Durant.
I'm just jealous about this. Yeah, his old high school friend. I love that he's got friends all over the world. I mean, I don't agree with the Olympics. I don't think it should be happening ever again.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, can't deny the power of friendship.
That's what we're talking about. That's what we're here to talk about.
That's right.
The power of friendship.
It is funny that he's like, yeah, I don't really care about winning a gold medal. I just want to hang out with my friend.
I want to play for Greg Popovich.
Yeah.
I want to hang out with this. I want to work with this old man. And I want to hang out with a guy that I played basketball with 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
It's cute.
All right. Awesome. Well, if you want to send us something, you can always email us at hi@dunk.town. This was a perfect example of what we love to receive in our inbox.
Yes.
I love to wake up in the morning and see an email about Bradley Beal's ass. and you can always leave us a message on our cutie hotline, 903-420-DUNK. Josh, thank you so much for being here. What a delight.
What a pleasure. Thank you for having me. I had a terrific time.
I'm glad to hear that. Is there anything you'd like to plug besides Desus and Mero, which is amazing? I love it.
Thank you.
Oh, that's very kind. I appreciate it. We've got some really fun stuff coming up that we've been shooting, and like we're back in the studio. I'm like really happy with and proud of the show. Yay, and like happy to be a little part of it. And I have a podcast called Make My Day. It's a comedy game show where there's one guest every week, so they're guaranteed to win. and I've got a book called Nice Try and a bunch of stand-up you can listen to. And I'm around. If you've done all that stuff, it's like, well, you're probably sick of me, so that's plenty.
you've got a list to get through.
Everyone should follow you on Twitter.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Yes. That's very kind.
We were just on a Twitch stream. We'll have the link in our show notes. Paul Scheer and Rob Hubels had us on to talk about NBA cuties.
Oh, so fun.
It was very fun.
Yeah, everyone should go check that out. And while it's still up, because those don't last on Twitch for that long. But then also just watch Paul's shows. He's killing it on Twitch right now.
He is. It was very fun. And thank you to all the cuties for coming with us on this journey. As always, we love you.
Love you.
Bye. For more Dunktown content, check out our Patreon. It's patreon.com/Dunktown. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Dunktown Podcast. I am on Twitter at @echo_mint and on Instagram at @agatamonica. Anastasia is on both at @AnastasiaVigo. Check out our website, dunk.town. If you like the show, please write us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever you listen. We always really appreciate those. We have t-shirts, stickers, hoodies, and more available for sale at dunk.town/store. Thank you to Andrea Tomingus for the Dunktown design, and thank you to Andrew Bear for our original music for the show. Sources and references from this episode can be found in the episode description.